on this episode of the Autumn Windbags. It is our biggest show to date, our 2021 draft extravaganza. We'll also react to Aaron Rodgers' claim that he wants out of Green Bay. We look at the 2021 draft class and examine how the Raiders fail to look at value. And also Carl Cochran from Raiders Films joins us and explains why value doesn't matter, and then makes us feel very optimistic about this draft class and upcoming season. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation, and we love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
There it is! Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto. Here we are the week after the 2021 NFL draft from Cleveland, Ohio. And it couldn't have been as bad as we expected, Soto. You still have a pulse. You haven't offed yourself.
Yeah. You know, I went to Arizona so I can go out and be with the animals and the coyotes and shit. And if I wanted to take some poison or a shot of iron. I've been out with nature.
This is getting real morbid real quick.
I'll tell you something right now. I was a lot happier initially until I started watching tape and analyzing the draft. I was a lot happier right after the draft than I am now.
Okay. Well, your happiness is all I wish for, Soto. Well, maybe this will make you happy. We'll definitely get to all the draft stuff here in a second. But maybe this will make you happy since, you know, you hate our quarterback, Derek Carr.
Oh, God, there we go.
The worst quarterback in the world.
Listen, didn't we agree?
Won, like, 3 Super Bowls the past 7 years.
We agreed that I wouldn't bring up Derek Carr if you wouldn't bring up Derek Carr.
I'm just making sure that we set the table correctly. Because I thought, this is what I'm saying, is maybe this is what's keeping you alive. The very rare but apparently very real possibility that Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay Packers quarterback, NFL MVP, Super Bowl winner, is apparently, according to a report by Adam Schefter, this was a giant bomb dropped the day of the NFL, like morning of the NFL draft last Thursday, which I think has a little bit to do with it. The timing is very convenient, but we'll get to that in a minute. Aaron Rodgers is disgruntled with the Green Bay Packers, and he has told someone within the organization he does not want to return to the team. Now, this is all, of course, a report from Adam Schefter. We haven't heard anything from Aaron Rodgers himself recently. And he's unhappy and wants to leave. And he said that, according to reports, that there's 3 teams he would go to: San Francisco 49ers, Denver Broncos, and the Las Vegas Raiders. This was a crazy, awesome way to get draft day started last Thursday, Soto.
Tingling in my plums.
Deep down in purple hue-ish blue.
Hue-ish blue.
Blue-ish hue, blue.
All right, so.
Plums. Okay, so I'm amazed you were able to travel with that giant boner you've had ever since you got the news.
Yeah, I have 3-legged pants for that reason.
Yep.
So, look, we're probably the second most likely team if he is to move, because San Francisco just gave up a lot of capital to move up in the draft. And yep. Draft Trey Lance. Okay, so that's probably not going to happen. I would say I'm 101% sure that's not going to happen.
Well, I mean, wouldn't they be happy to trade Trey Lance to the Packers and a bunch of picks to get Aaron Rodgers?
Well, the Packers already have their guy. The Packers already drafted their guy, who's not number one, who's already been in the system, and who was rated just as high, if not maybe a little bit higher, as Trey Lance coming out of college.
Okay.
So if you already have your guy, why would you get another? You have 2 developmental quarterbacks. It just doesn't make sense.
Okay.
Plus, San Francisco doesn't have the capital anytime soon to give seemingly what Green Bay would want.
The Rodgers ransom.
Yeah, the Rodgers ransom. Yeah. So that leaves the Broncos and my Raiders.
Okay.
The only reason I see the Raiders going after Rodgers is mostly out of spite. you know, to keep them away from the Broncos.
Yeah.
I mean, as it is right now, arguably, we might have the worst offense and the worst defense in our own division.
No.
Okay.
Worst offense? We have a better offense than the Chargers and the Broncos. Definitely.
Last year we did.
And we will this year. Definitely.
Oh, you can't say that.
No doubt
you
about
can't
it.
Say, you can't say that. Watch number me. One. Oh, okay. Say whatever you want. We'll keep the receipt. We'll play it back later.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they do or they don't. I'm saying it can be argued that they have the worst offense and the worst defense in the division. With Aaron Rodgers on your team, that's not even an argument as far as the offense goes. And, I mean, a good quarterback is, you know, a quarterback is like a Catholic priest. You know, he can take away a lot of sins, but he can end up fucking you if you're not careful. All right. So
good analogy.
It just popped into my fucking head right now.
I hope you didn't plan that one. I hope you didn't have that written down. You're like, oh, I'm going to knock RJ's socks off with this one.
Oh, no, I'm telling you. Look, are the Raiders likely to get him? Probably not. Is Rodgers likely to move? Probably not. It seems like a pretty diva move to drop this bomb on draft day, like a couple hours before the draft, and then not say anything the entire draft weekend or since. Who knows, man? If he's likely to move, I mean, those are the two.
It reeks of Aaron Rodgers saying, draft me some weapons.
He's a diva, dude. He's a diva. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. Because the motherfucker puts up numbers, dude. The reigning MVP, people thought he was washed up. He said, all right, check this out. Boom. One of the top 10 best quarterback seasons of all time.
Yeah.
So he's got the stuff, man. He's got the stuff. He makes any team he goes to a Super Bowl contender because he's that fucking good. So I think the Raiders would be stupid not to at least call over and over and over again. Would I want Aaron Rodgers over a super hot chick? Yes. I would want the Aaron Rodgers on the Raiders, and I would call a super hot chick a bunch of times to fuck her. I would call Aaron Rodgers a shit ton of times. I would call Green Bay a shit ton of times to get Aaron
You'd Rodgers. Call four a shit ton of times just to fuck him, Soto. So imagine what you would do for Aaron Rodgers.
It's true.
This is what's the biggest take for me. Because I'm with you in that I don't think Rodgers is going anywhere. I think this too was good, just kind of like maybe. The timing was too perfect, right? Day of the draft. I think he's sending a message.
And they drafted a fucking DB. They're like, fuck you, Aaron Rodgers.
All right, double bird.
So sweet. I was so fucking dumb when I said it. Oh my God, it was hilarious.
So I think it was just kind of like a power move from Eric. Could he go somewhere? Maybe. According to the Packers, they've only gotten one call. That was from the 49ers, and they just like turned it down right away. Raiders haven't called. Denver hasn't called. So maybe the teams and GMs and coaches kind of know what Aaron Rodgers is doing here. But the big story to me was the teams that he picked. Raiders, Broncos, Niners. Like you said, Niners make very little sense with how much draft capital they gave out. The Raiders have a terrible defense. Why would Aaron Rodgers want to go, you know, to a team that has, you know, maybe he just cares about the offense, like cares less about what, he just cares about his stats. I don't know. The Broncos was the one that scared me because they're just one good quarterback away from being a major problem. They have a decent quarterback, right? They just traded for Teddy Bridgewater. And that we talked about it last week. Teddy Bridgewater alone wins when he has a team. Teddy Bridgewater alone, when he has good things around him, plays pretty well. Imagine the Broncos not being just a sinking ship with Drew Lock at the helm, flipping that around and having Aaron Rodgers.
With a fucking wide receiver playing quarterback last year.
That would be a major issue. But look at it this way. Like, we talk about how, John Gruden, 3 years, you know, 3 years again with the Raiders, no playoff appearances. Oh, he drafts crazy. Oh, he's just so impulsive, blah, 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 blah. Two of what? You have Seattle and Green Bay's quarterback. Both made ultimatums. And both times, the Raiders were one of the very, very tiny few players that they picked. I think about it. Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers are probably two of the top five.
I would say
quarterbacks in the league, right? Probably. Like, I think it's pretty fair to say.
Two out of five, yeah.
And both of them picked three or four teams, and both of them picked the Raiders. That's bonkers to me because it's not like we're a team that's terrible. Like, it's really great, but we have a terrible quarterback that's holding them back. We have a good, a good, even you acknowledge a good quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, you know, a much better than average quarterback. I think he's much better than that, but you know, even the harshest critics say like, oh yeah,
no, I've said he's above average.
Yeah. But you still hate him. But the fact that they're going and they're saying, I don't care that the defense is terrible. I don't care that they haven't had a winning record under John Gruden. I want to go play for the Raiders. That tells me something. Maybe it's as simple as, hey, new stadium, no income tax. You know, Vegas is a great, I think I can be a star in Las Vegas. Some things like that. But I think John Gruden is running an offense that quarterbacks kind of drool at. And they're just like, damn, like Derek Carr is balling out under John Gruden. Imagine what I can do.
And I think that's something that I'm going to touch on it briefly. But yeah, I think with the league sees Derek Carr for what he is as well. He's an above average quarterback who's playing at a well above average level in that system. If you put an even better quarterback in there, you're talking MVP level every single year with the weapons he has with, you know, I've said it a few weeks ago, as predictable. One of the things about John Gruden that people say is that he's predictable. Well, yeah, but his offense still works for the most part. It still works. There's some issues like, and I think those issues can be
the top 10 offense by every conceivable metric.
Yeah.
Even with the line completely falling apart and injuries, even with the number one receiver in back-to-back seasons going out before he was even able to go, like, I don't know if Derek Carr really has the crazy weapons that we're talking about. I think Carr is, you know, I'm not making this a big Carr thing. I think Carr's playing well and Gruden's system is great. And you know, Darren Waller's phenomenal.
I think if you plug in Wilson or Rodgers into that offense, it just gets bumped up even more, because if you just take the red zone snaps, the amount of chances they got in the red zone, even with the bad field position, they were able to move the ball down the field and get, I mean, they led the league in sub 30 yard field goals. That means the ball was like on the 12 yard line or less.
They can move the ball. No doubt.
They can move the ball. So if they get in there, Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, that's where they shine. They don't go in the red zone and not get touchdowns. So is it going to happen? Like you said, probably not. But I mean, it's fun to think about, you know, what would happen. You know, neither one of them are going to lack for weapons, you know, on the Raiders. So plus stars bring stars. Yeah. Stars want to play with stars.
Yeah. How do you think the Chiefs and the Bucks have been able to keep their teams together? Like, all these veteran guys are like, oh, I'll take 2 million less. I'll take
fucking Ndamukong Suh. Like, oh yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I signed my first deal for like a bazillion dollars. Yeah. I'll go ahead and play for 2 million. No big deal.
Yeah. A dude that notoriously just chased money his entire career. Right. I can't blame him. Right. He's just like, hey, I'll 1 year deal, 2 year deal.
I'm not talking shit on it.
Highest bidder. That's where I'll go. And even he's like, eh, I kind of like it here. I kind of like winning. It's fun.
Winning's fun.
I get used to this.
Yeah. Who knows, man? We'll see. We'll see if the Raiders can get that front office together. From all accounts.
Well, and that's the other part of this is, and it's really hard to gauge exactly how much to take of this report, but there's a report from what Tony Pauline, is that Pauline? I'm not sure who that is, but he works for, wrong guy. Who was it that made the report? I'm trying to find it right now, that there's heads were going to roll in the Raiders front office.
Tony Pauline.
What was his name?
Tony Pauline wrote it.
Yeah, but it wasn't. It was a guy from PFF.
Let's see.
You sent me a stupid link. This is the wrong link that you sent.
What the fuck are you talking about? This is your link.
I'm pretty sure it's yours.
Oh my god. Okay, let's make it mine then. Fuck it.
Okay, it's yours.
I didn't even put a fucking link up there. But
word in league circles is a major shakeup in the Las Vegas front office will be coming soon after the draft, and significant heads are expected to roll. I think it is from this guy. The pick of So this came out Friday morning. The pick of Alex Leatherwood in the middle of round one last night, a player that could have traded down and selected, is opening a lot of wounds and seems to be the final straw. Additionally, I'm also hearing a lot of friction between major players in their front office. So this is to Raider fans, a giant bomb, and which is kind of like a random little blog by a guy I'm not so sure who he is. So it's really hard to put a lot of stake in it. And it also doesn't sound like, I feel like I would have heard more rumblings of this from other insiders of the Raiders organization. And I haven't heard.
Well, here's the deal. It's not like they have their front office, quote unquote, front office is like 10 people. It's three people. Their front office is three people.
Yeah.
It's Mark Davis, it's John Gruden, and it's Mike Mayock. That's it. That's their front office. Okay. All these other guys that are hanging around, those are scouts and like, buddy, hey, put a fucking suit on and you can be in the draft room. Like, this is old. The Raiders do things their own fucking way. And even.
And in reality, it's really a two-man front office.
That's
true. Mark Davis and John Gruden.
That's true. But I mean, when they speak of front office, like heads to roll, it's probably going to be Mayock. They're talking about Mayock's head.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. If the Raiders bomb next season, Mayock is the one that's going to be asked to fall on the shield.
I'm telling you right now, if they get into like training camp and these guys are like, what the fuck? I'm thinking they should fucking let them go right then and there.
I don't know. They hung on to Gunther all the way till the very end of last season. Like, you know, only a couple of games.
That's a little bit different. That's a little bit different. The GM isn't quite as important during the season as he is in the offseason, especially when, for all accounts, he's really not the GM. It's mostly fucking Gruden making the decisions. But, man, it's – oh, dude. We'll get into this a little bit later, but, I mean
– I don't know. There's not a lot of details. I really don't know the guy
when there's three people in the front office, how many details are there to leak out?
There's a lot of friction between major players in the front. There's always friction when it comes to the draft. I want this guy. You want that guy. He wants this guy. It's like, all right, well, we'll figure it out. Like, I don't know. Lack of details. This kind of coming out of nowhere. And maybe it's 100% true.
I don't know if it's coming out of nowhere. I think that it's been there for a while. I think it's just we didn't think that the Raiders were going to pull the trigger because they have, I mean, Al Davis had a quicker trigger finger than anyone, but Mark Davis has seemed to have a little bit more patience. Is it really a bombshell? Is it really a surprise? I mean,
well, it depends.
Take a look at their freaking draft.
When it
man.
Says heads are rolling, lots of friction. Does that mean like a secretary got fired and like two dudes were mad for 20 minutes? Or does that mean that there's a complete overhaul and everyone's at each other's throats? Again, no details and really no follow-up stories either. So we had to bring it up because it was brought up and it was a story for a minute. I don't know. I'm not taking that much stake in it. Well, regardless, the draft went down this last weekend. Had a first rounder, second rounder, a couple thirds, pretty deep draft. And what did I say last week going into this draft? It was, look, I'm not so much picking like specific players or like demanding specific positions get taken. My big thing was like, look, make sure that as a squad, as Gruden, Mayock, scouts, everybody, you look in the mirror and say, all right, well, how have we screwed up the last couple drafts? What can we learn from it? Let's look in the mirror and make some changes. Let's stop reaching for guys. Let's stop falling in love with specific dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not presume that our pick is like definitely the guy. Like, look at it as far as
mm-hmm.
value.
Mm-hmm.
And they go and reach at every position.
And what did I say? I said, John, people change when they're incentivized to change. Mm-hmm. And John Gruden has 7 years left on his contract, so I'm pretty sure he's not going to change now. And we were both right.
So the Raiders go Alex Leatherwood, tackle from Alabama, round one. Trevon Moehrig, safety, TCU, round two. Malcolm Kuntz, end from Buffalo, round three. Divine Diablo, DB out of Virginia Tech, round three. Round four, Tyree Gillespie, safety out of Missouri. Round five, Nate Hobbs, cornerback out of Illinois. And then random seventh round pick that we got from a trade, which we'll get to in a second, Jimmy Morrissey, center out of Pittsburgh. So they started and ended the draft with offensive line. All five picks in the middle, all defense. It's the first draft in Raiders history without drafting one skill player. No quarterback, wide receiver, running back, or tight end.
Well, that's what they needed.
Yep.
That's what they needed. And I don't think that my issue was ever with the positions chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And not, you know, because I was in Arizona this last weekend and I was following a lot of the draft off my phone. The more I looked at each pick,
yeah,
I gave them the benefit of the doubt as far as position went. And I can see, oh, this is a position of need. We need to get this guy. But they're not doing that. Yeah. Like you said, they're keying in on a specific player, and they're saying, fuck everything else. This is our guy.
Yeah.
But the problem is, like, again, what I said last week is Gruden and Mayock have not earned that benefit of the doubt. And I'm just getting really tired at trying to rationalize and trying to make excuses for these picks. Oh, well, you know what? If you look at it from this perspective, X, Y, Z. No, because by all – and I will say this up front. These experts and all this stuff, these draft experts and these draft evaluators and all this stuff, they don't run a franchise. I get that. But when everybody but you is saying the same thing, maybe you have to change the way you're doing things. Because everybody said Farrell was a reach. Everybody said Arnett was a reach. I wouldn't say everybody said Ruggs was a reach, but I mean, by and large, he was considered a reach. Abram was considered a reach. And these, and the jury's still out on Ruggs. He did perform well in stretches last year. But these other three guys, these are the guys that you got for Mac and for Cooper. Mm-hmm. And what did you do with it? You didn't get impact players on your team, and you reached where there were better players at the same position. It wasn't like, okay, there was better players at other positions. You know, like Devin Bush was picked one pick after Cleveland Farrell, yeah. Right?
Ouch.
I would like to have him on my team. I would take either him or Josh Allen on my team above Farrell. But it's like you have to be able to take the temperature of the rest of the league when you reach that far for these players. And I don't think any of these reaches have panned out, to be honest with you.
Well, you could tell the Raiders, this sounds like a Gruden thing, falls in love with a specific player. You fall in love with a player and you're like, all right, I want that guy. And that's why there's all these reaches in round one. All the guys you mentioned, I think Alex Leatherwood, our tackle from Alabama in our first round this last draft, a reach, right? He went higher than most people thought he was going to go. Most experts had him pegged as a second round player.
A full round higher,
right? So one, it's the draft really truly is a crapshoot, right? Anyone who thinks they've got it figured out is lying. No coach or GM or scout has a phenomenal, like, unbreakable record, like, with draft picks.
Yes, right? Everyone has fault,
right? Some guys are a little better than others, some guys are worse than others, but generally, the problem is the Raiders fall in love with guys and don't treat draft picks as value. They say, I want that guy, right? Like you said, they don't have the history to say, okay, we'll just trust you. Like, you're so good at picking draft picks that if you pick a guy that's out of order, it's okay because you got this great history of just, like, getting all these home runs, right?
Oh, those crafty Raiders did it again. Yeah. No, it's like, oh, the Raiders did it again and shit themselves.
Never happens, right? And so the Raiders need to treat draft picks as currency, as value, as something, not 17 means we can get whoever we want minus the 16 guys that came before it. It's no, 17 has a value as currency. It has a dollar amount per se, right? And you need to turn that into draft current, like draft capital. Okay. What do I mean by that? When you look, like, a lot of people brought up this, right? Alex Leatherwood, number one, Trevor Marg, round two, right? People say, oh, well, if they just would have went Trevin number one, Leatherwood number two, no one would complain because you get the two players, but just because it went out of order. No, because they had to give up draft picks to get at number 42, Trevin, right? They had to make a trade and give up value. Yep. To get the guy that they wanted. So no, it isn't flip evenly. And that's consistently what's wrong with the Raiders. Like, look, let's say, okay, for the sake of argument, all right, just for the sake of this argument, let's say Alex Leatherwood is the best tackle in this draft. Maybe he is, probably not, but okay. For the sake of this argument, let's just say Alex Leatherwood's the best tackle in the draft and the Raiders got the best tackle with pick number 17. They still could have gotten him and had more value. They could have traded back to like 30 or, you know, 36 or whatever it was and still gotten value with that pick and their guy. But they didn't. They just said, oh, we fell in love with this guy, so we're going to get him. Stop treating draft picks as players and start treating draft picks as value.
Yeah, it's everyone's going to say the same two things. I can always see the message boards. Oh, you're, you know, armchair GMs, then you do this, and these guys watch all this film and all this and that and all this other shit. Look, fucking save it, all right? Because everybody said Cleveland Farrell was picked way too high. He was like the 25th, 27th guy on the board, picked at four. Guess what?
He's performed like it.
He's performed like it. Arnett was the fourth best DB on his college team, and he's performed like it. Abram was a nice prospect with some issues. You know, he was a nice prospect, maybe not a first round pick. More like, again, another guy that was picked maybe a round too early. Mm-hmm. He's played well. He's played like an undrafted rookie. That guy's not played well at all.
Yeah.
Ruggs was outplayed by like six other.
Jonathan Abram's in a starting position only because of his draft position. If everyone came in like on level playing field, he would not be the starter.
He would not play. He would not play. So the thing that you have to be, before you say any of that, guys, before you comment, oh, you guys are this and you guys are second guessing and this and that. The only reason I put this list together is because by and large, these picks were who the draft experts said they were. They turned out to be who they said they were going to be, mm-hmm. right? So let's take a look at the first round pick, okay? And what I did was, look, let me take a look at the next player selected, the same position, right? Not so I'm not going to say, oh, this player is better at a different position, right? Just to make it easy.
Yeah.
So number 17, Alex Leatherwood, tackle from Alabama. Five picks later at 22, Christian Darrisaw, tackle from Virginia Tech. By and large, I think universally rated higher than Alex Leatherwood. Okay, it happens one time, but it's happening in the first round. These are very, very valuable picks here, okay? The reason why we are where we are defensively is because we've taken the Cleveland Farrells instead of the Devin Bushes. It's because we've taken the Arnetts. It's because we've taken the Abrams in our first round. These are supposed to be impact starters on your team, and they're anything but. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's what's happening with our defense is young. Oh, yeah, our defense is young, and the players that we do have that we drafted high just aren't that good. They're not first round talent. Mm-hmm. Okay, second round we picked Merrick. Okay, Merrick had some injury concerns with his back. It doesn't seem like it's too serious, but it scared a couple of guys away. He was a third safety off the board, rated as the number one. We lucked out. We still had to trade capital to get up and get him, yep. But we got the guy. Okay, fine. Third round, Malcolm Kuntz, but I looked at five different ratings. He was a fifth round to a seventh round pick. Mm-hmm. 5 to 7, okay? He went in the third round when guys like Patrick Jones, a defensive end out of Pittsburgh, Baron Browning, outside linebacker out of Ohio State, who are very similar guys, pass rushing guys, even the I don't understand. I don't get how they're evaluating these players and they're being so off from everybody else. Now, granted, we're not in other teams' draft rooms, but they're not making these mistakes multiple times a year. We're making these mistakes every single year in the first round. So the next pick, Divine Diablo, safety, Virginia Tech, who should project into more of a special package linebacker. Jabril Cox was there. I don't know why Jabril Cox lasted until pick 115, the linebacker from LSU, but he was available. He doesn't have quite the deep cover skills as Diablo has, but Diablo probably is not going to be used for that. He's going to be used as more of a, you know, sub package linebacker. All right. Next pick, Terry Gillespie, safety out of Missouri, about nine picks later. Caden Strands, safety out of Texas. Rated higher, much higher.
Yep.
And again, it's not the ratings. You have to go to the field, right? But the problem that we're seeing is why are we taking these guys so far ahead of where they're projected to go? Because when we do that, they don't pan out. Nate Hobbs, go ahead.
And again, I hope all our guys pan out. I hope the Raiders got all these right. Right, I hope Alec Leatherwood, best tackle in the draft. I hope Trevin, best safety out there. I hope Malcolm Kuntz is because a beast off the edge. I hope Divine Diablo, sweet name, by the way. Divine Diablo. That's a jersey I want to get. I hope he just crushes people at safety, right? It doesn't mean knocking the players. This is me saying we could have gotten all these players, Leatherwood, Marg, Kuntz, Diablo, Gillespie, plus like another third rounder if we would have traded down, picked these guys where they are value-wise. I'm not knocking the players. I'm not even knocking the picks. I'm knocking the value.
The value.
You're giving up this big of a – you're giving up a third rounder for a guy you could have gotten around 4 and 5. That's what I'm knocking. That's the problem. Not these same picks, thing. Not the players. I'm hoping they take off. And again, it's not the players' fault. I'm not mad at Alex Leatherwood. But what I'm mad is that we could have had all these guys plus another like third or fourth rounder if we would have maximized the values of the picks.
And the thing is, when you take a look at our defense, that's where it shows. That's where the value shows, is you're missing out on these guys that should round out your roster. Instead, the guys that are backups normally or special teams guys, those guys are starting on your defense. Mm. And that's where it shows up, is on your depth. And it shows up in the top, is at the top and the bottom. It shows up at your elite players on defense, and it shows up at your bottom players on the defense. Those bottom players are now bumped up to having to play more than they should. And those middle players or starters are having to play a higher role, or more is expected of them than what they're capable of.
Yeah.
And I can just see it now, because, you know, listen, guys, I love your comments, man. Keep them coming. Even if you're killing me, they're fucking great. I love it. And it's the thing is, like, oh, wait and see, this guy's going to be this. Wait and see, this guy's going to be that. And, you know, Carl said at this first, oh, I did a video on Jonathan Abrams. He's going to be fine. Okay, I'm glad you have that kind of confidence, but I'm looking at what I'm seeing on the field. Okay, you can look at that tape, you can look at that college tape, that's fine, because you're going against college receivers in a college system against college quarterbacks. It's a little bit different now, and he looks absolutely lost. And that's how a lot of our team looks, just out of place. Cleveland Farrell, yeah, you're a cornerstone of our defense, you were drafted number 4 overall. Whoops. Arnett can't stay on the field. Abrams getting turned around left and right. It's like, look, these players could all be very nice players. And I heard a couple of things from some people. Alex Leatherwood's going to be just fine. If he's a 10-year starter in the NFL, you guys are going to be eating shit or whatever. Look, I'm not saying he's not going to be a 10-year starter in the NFL. I'm saying that there was a player that was better than him at his same position who was taken. Is Alex Leatherwood a scrub? No, he started for the national champion. I mean, one of the perennial top programs of all time. He started at multiple positions for them. He was team captain. He was a leader. He was an Outland Trophy winner. Okay? But there were better players available. And right now, we're not in a position to be like, oh, well, he's good enough. Because good enough in the NFL just isn't. It just isn't.
And again, like, I don't know. The Raiders don't know. Alex Leatherwood doesn't know. Nobody knows if Alex Leatherwood is the best tackle in this draft. But what I do know is we could have gotten him and other stuff if we would have maximized our picks. That is what is infuriating to me. Not any individual player. It's how the Raiders say, like, they just fall in love with players. And not, you guys, honestly, it sounds heartless. You need to stop treating these players as human beings and look at them like stock picks, like mutual funds.
Yeah.
Right. Like they're equity. These picks are equity. And you need to treat it as such.
You could treat them as people when they're in the facility. Once you get to know them and you're in the facility, then they're okay, fine. Now they're people.
Yep.
But ahead of that, no, that's capital. That's capital for you. Those are increments that you can get.
They're
better.
Poker chips and you're at the table, right? What do they say every time you go to a poker? You can't play poker treating the chips like money. You can't treat chips as money that you're afraid to lose. You have to treat it as tools, as equity, as capital. And that's not how they treat it. And that's what's infuriating.
Yeah. Now, and look, of course, you do need a trade partner to trade back. The problem that I see is that there's nobody that wants to trade up. Even if you don't get the proper value, not in the first selection, because if you trade up to like the beginning of the second round, let's say, right? And you don't get your true value for that first round pick. If you still get your guy, who gives a flying fuck? It's better than staying there and getting nothing else and picking the same goddamn player.
Yeah.
It's almost like an ego thing at that point where like, no, you're trying to swindle me. Who gives a shit? You're still going to take the same guy. Mm-hmm. And out of spite, you're going to take the same guy and then get nothing else. It just doesn't make sense, man. It doesn't make sense.
And this is two out of the last three drafts. The excuse for taking someone super high, Farrell and Leatherwood, is, well, we couldn't get a draft trading partner. Then get fucking better at negotiating. Like, other teams do it all the time. Other teams trade down and still get what they want and still get value for their picks, or they smell weakness with other GMs and teams and be like, oh, these guys are super in love with, you know, pick number 24. We can get a ton out of them. Boom, let's make our move. Or, you know, like, other teams do it all the time. But with the Raiders, like, whoa, we just couldn't do it. We just couldn't get someone to go our way. Well, then fucking read a negotiation book. Like, dude, like, pull these
They're
moves
not
off.
Very good,
even,
man.
Even the trade for Trevon, right? Like, I'm glad we got Trevon Moehrig. I'm sure he'll be fine. But we gave up a lot for a number 42 pick to go up five spots. We went up five or six spots. And we gave up that much. It's like, we're the suckers. We're the suckers at the poker table. Yeah, we're the ones where other teams are like, oh, I know Gruden fell in love with somebody. Here, yeah, I'll give you a, you know, give, you know, I'll give you a seventh rounder for that, you know, to go up that spot. Or, you know, here, yeah. I'll give you, a crap sixth rounder to let me go up 12 spots. Cause like the Raiders are the ones that get swindled here.
Yeah. If you're playing poker and you don't see the sucker, you're the sucker. Right. And, they're just not very good, at working a board. Mm-hmm. They're not very good at it.
They treat the picks as players that they're in love with.
Yeah, look,
and not value. And that's what's screwing.
Yeah, and the players, like almost every single one of their players they drafted was a team captain, and that's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a team captain. He's a leader. He's this. He's that.
Not one player opted out last season too. So that whole thing that Mayock was like, well, we're gonna take it case by case. Not one opt out. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know if that's good or bad, but just something I observed.
But it's something that you have to talk about. Because of their history. Mayock has been a piss poor GM on draft day. Has not gotten the right players because there's been other players available that were, you know, roundly ranked higher. And he just...
And this is what I wonder is how much power does Mayock have on draft day? Because there's so many, like... And I'm not saying this based on inside information that I have. I'm not saying this because someone, like... leak something to me. I'm saying this just from being a Raider fan my whole life and watching how John Gruden is and how Mike Mayock is. The Gruden grinder team captain, I'm in love with this guy, like first and second round picks, that reeks of Gruden. And then the versatile diamond in the rough mid round picks, that reeks of Mayock. So like 2019 is the best example, right? Reached on Clay Farrell. That sounded like just the most Gruden thing ever. Josh Jacobs, a running back, was great, but a running back in round one, that reeks of John Gruden. And then Jonathan Abram, just like a hard-hitting guy that like sets the tone, an alpha presence to take a John Gruden line, right? Reeks of John Gruden. But then you go Max Crosby 4, Foster Moreau 4, Hunter Renfrow 5. That feels like Mayock. That feels like, oh, okay, these are dudes that were, you know, not – you know, they're mid-late rounders. They've got intangibles. You know, generally came from really big programs, except for obviously Crosby, Eastern Michigan. Those felt like Mayock picks to me. And so I'm hoping that 2021 is the same way. Leatherwood was just like, all right, Tom Cable told John Gruden, I want this guy. And Gruden fell in love too, boom. But maybe Kuntz becomes a really great edge rusher for us. Maybe Gillespie will become a franchise safety for us, right? Maybe like Divine Diablo is this really great, like hybrid dude that can do damage for us. Like this feels like 2019 all over again to me, Soto, which is hurts at the beginning, but the mid round picks may, I think, save this class.
There is no saving a class when you whiff in the first round. There is none. Because,
well, but again, though, I'm not saying Leatherwood is a whiff. I'm saying all these picks, like, it's like we were giving all these picks and we just all went down a notch and
looking at is this. I'm not saying Leatherwood's a bad player, and I'm not really more so talking about this draft. The 2019 draft is still a bust of a draft, right? It's still a bust of a draft. So was 2018, because our first round pick really hasn't, our first round picks really didn't give us much.
Well, right? Jacobs has.
Okay. What was the, what were the three picks that first round?
Farrell, Jacobs, Abram.
Okay. Out of those three, one out of three.
One landed. And even then he was a reach, but he landed.
Even then he was a reach. Then you get Ruggs and Arnett the next year. And I mean, Ruggs was decent. He was okay, but he was outperformed by a lot of guys. And Arnett was not very good.
That 2020 draft could go down as one of the worst ever. I mean,
it was bad. It was just bad all the way around.
Lynn Bowden traded before the season started. Tanner Muse, by all accounts, was just completely lost. Third round. And these are third rounders. These are third rounders.
Yeah.
That were like nothing burgers. Lynn Bowden and Tanner Muse, nothing. John Simpson, like, he's supposed to be starting for us at guard next season. Probably not. Probably not gonna. Like, you're a fourth round guard, like, from a big program in Clemson. You know? Now, again, I the jury is far from out. Like, the book is not written on Ruggs, Arnett, Edwards, even Simpson. Like, the book's not written on them yet. It's definitely not fair to be like, all right, you're judged solely on your rookie career.
I'll tell you this, though.
But a lot of other rookies did good this season. A lot of other rookies did great at your exact same position.
Abram's on notice. Abram's on notice big time. He might not even make the fucking team, dude. He might not even make the team. I wouldn't be surprised.
No. The Raiders have the GMs and coaches and scout, like, positional players, like, they have way too much pride to just, like, release him. He may fall down the death chart if, like,
the death chart
if, like, Divine Diablo goes, like, bonkers, right? You know, if someone, like, really goes great. And
I guess you're right. I mean, as bad as Jamarcus Russell was, he lasted 3 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all right.
And if you bail, and okay, then this is the other part. So there's two. So that's all the down, like, the primary takeaway was, like, all right, the Raiders are still the Raiders, not treating picks as value, right? That's the big negative, and it's the biggest one. But there's slivers of positive that I like here. I do like how they have a plan of, we want positionally diverse players, right? Leatherwood played guard, tackle, left side, right side, right? Which, that was a big plus for us on our line last season when guys kept getting hurt, right? Kuntz and outside linebacker, edge rusher, could play different positions. Divine Diablo, kind of like a hybrid linebacker safety type of thing, you know?
He's like, the most hybrid of the bunch. Kuntz really isn't. He was outside linebacker by position name only. He was a pass rusher. Mm-hmm. That's what he was. That's what he did. The versatility you're speaking of is Leatherwood and Diablo. The other guys really don't have a lot of flexibility. I'm trying to be positive about it. Like, you know what? These are decent players, but the problem is, we don't need decent players. When we pick, we're in the position now, we need to pick players who come in and make an impact on our team. And besides Merrick, I don't really see a guy coming in there and making a huge impact.
Okay, Leatherwood could. I think we're dumping on Leatherwood a lot because it was a bad value pick, but I mean, he's going to be our starting right tackle. Like, that's a done deal. Like it or not, he's a starting right tackle, and we're going to find out, you know, pretty soon if that's where he belongs. But this is the other thing, too. Per ESPN Stats and Info, Leatherwood got worse his senior year. His junior year, he allowed 7 pressures. He allowed 14 last season. He allowed 0 sacks 2 seasons ago. He allowed 5 last season. And he was called for 17 penalties the last 2 seasons, tied for 2nd among offensive linemen in that span. So he got, I don't know if he got lazy his last year. Maybe the pandemic treated him weird. I don't know what to put that on, but he wasn't trending the right way in his last season. We'll see what that
means. Look, if there's any squad on our team that I trust to have a guy coached up, it's our offensive line. I have that much faith in Tom Cable. All right. And I don't think that Tom Cable really got, went into this decision much at all. Because
what do you mean?
I think they saw a position of need and they saw their guy that they wanted. And he's from a big time program. He's this, he's that, he's a trophy winner. He's a team captain. We need to have that kind of guy on our team.
Yeah. Why watch tape on hundreds and hundreds of teams and thousands of players? You can just watch the playoffs and just pick those guys.
Yeah. Pick those guys. Yeah. No big deal.
Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. I'm just going to watch those guys and pick from there.
This doesn't make a lot of sense, man. So look, hopefully, the one thing that you have to take a look at Gus Bradley's defense, the offense, okay, I think that Leatherwood's going to be just fine at right tackle or even right guard if they push him in and Good goes out to right tackle like he did a little bit last year. He's been shown to be able to play there. If that happens, that's all good. Okay, offensive line's going to be nice. We move forward. Defensively, what you're looking at are players that fit specific roles on a Gus Bradley team. Merrick is God damn, I freaking forgot his name. He played at Texas. He was the safety with the Seattle Seahawks.
Huff?
No, we drafted? No. What the fucking God damn it. God damn it.
Damn it, brain.
Damn it, my brain. It got too much bong resin in it.
Yeah, you got a Google machine right in front of you. You don't have to use that brain. Thank God.
I know, right?
This show would suck. If
you Earl Thomas. Brain.
There we go.
Earl Thomas. God damn it, my fucking brain. He's Earl Thomas. That's who he's drafted to be, Earl Thomas. Divine Diablo is probably going to play that Cam Chancellor role where he's, you know, either out deep or he's in the box. There's really no in between with him. There's these guys that play specific roles on the team. You know, Carl Cochran said the first time around, Bradley likes to have that undersized pass rusher, that D end, that Ingram type guy. And that's, you know, that Ingram, that Irvin type of, you know, pass rush specialist that can be, can Kuntz be that guy? We'll have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. You have one similar in Ngakoue right now, who's a little bit undersized and who's mostly a pass rush specialist. It just seems like a decent capital to, in the third round, you're picking this project guy who's a specialist. If you're picking a specialist in the third round, he better be a fucking damn good specialist.
Yeah.
And you're picking a more of a project guy. It's like, it just, the more and more I studied this draft and I did watch tape on each one of these guys. The only one that I didn't watch tape on was like the Nate Hobbs and Jimmy Morrissey. Like, look, man, yeah, cut me some slack here. Okay. I wasn't at home, but I just, I'm shaking my head.
My biggest takeaways are there's no one player on this draft squad where I'm just like, all right, this guy's a schlub. I can't believe he got this guy's guy. Like, I felt that way a couple of times in the last few drafts, like Tanner Muse. I was like, what the hell? Like, this guy doesn't have a position. Just some like goofy oversized white dude from Clemson that like doesn't know what he's going to do. Like, that was a weird pick. Like, none of these felt bad. They felt like reaches, but they're like, all right, I want that guy on my team. Just not the position he was picked. So The overvalue of the picks was my big takeaway. The diversity of these guys and the positions they can play, I like. And the fact that we went all, you know, we bookended it with, you know, linemen, which we needed to tackle, and then all defense, which was good. Like that, at least that was one part of this. I'm like, all right, Gruden at least had the self-awareness to say, our offense is stacked, our skill players are great, we're good to go, and yet, so let's go all defense. That is probably the best sign of all is Gruden wasn't like, all right, let's get another Tyreek Hill. Let's find another speedy receiver. Let's, you know, he wanted, let's get another running back, even though we have four and a fullback, right? Like another Raiders takeaway. Then we'll get to kind of like the rest of the draft picks and how it affects the Raiders from the other teams. This is the fourth draft of Gruden in his second stint with the Raiders, fourth full draft with Gruden. Not one quarterback drafted in four drafts. What does that say about how he feels about Derek Carr? I think that means, hey, let's put it to bed. Not that we can't improve every single position, but not one project, not one high pick, not one low pick, none. Not one quarterback drafted in four drafts by the Raiders.
How's he done otherwise?
Hit and miss.
Not great. Mostly miss.
But it, I'm not saying he would have made a good pick. I'm just saying that kind of goes where his head's at, where he, people are like, oh, you know, Gruden's got a wandering eye. He wants to get rid of Carr. He hasn't made any moves to say that that's the case. All right. So how do you feel? Any other things outside of who the Raiders picked, right? The Raiders have their 7 picks. The Bears got their quarterback. They got Justin Fields. I know people were saying like, oh, darn, like, because we played the Bears. We got a home game against the Bears next season. Like, yeah. Oh, that's going to be a tougher
game. Yeah.
I disagree. Because I don't like who's going to be better. Who's going to be better? Andy Dalton now or a rookie Justin Fields? I'd probably say Dalton. Right. Like, you know, rookie year. In the future, I think Justin Fields is going to play great. But
I think it depends on how early Justin Fields plays.
I think they're going to start him real early.
If they start him real early, it could be a real problem for us.
No, I think that if they start Justin Fields his rookie year, I think that's a better case scenario than Andy Dalton. I think Andy Dalton next season is better than Justin Fields. Justin Fields years 2, 3, and 4,
mm-hmm.
I think is much better than Andy Dalton. So I kind of like that for next, because I'm not thinking long term, right? If it was like like if the Broncos got Justin Fields or something, like, oh shit, like that's gonna be a problem down the line. That's long term issues.
Well,
but the Bears aren't in our division, so I just care about next season.
So the Broncos got Pat Surtain the second, which is not good for us because mm-hmm. it made an already strong defense even stronger. And with Bridgewater, he doesn't turn the ball over very much. So you're not going to be able to get those easy points off of these guys. You have to drive the field a lot more. But I think the biggest problem in our division is the Chargers getting Rashawn Slater. Yeah. Even running for his life, Justin Herbert played off of his ass. He was doing shit that he wasn't doing in college.
Yeah.
Okay. And now he has a legit top flight left tackle that you can build a whole line around. And that's a big problem. That's a big problem for us. Especially how weak our pass rush has been. It just makes things even harder. Mm-hmm. Chiefs did, you know, a couple things here and there, whatever. They got a couple of the speedy guys. This is what they do. Get more weapons, right? I don't know how the fuck they do it. And so they'll find a way to pay everybody. But we got to worry about first winning our division. And it seems like although that we did get better at positions of need, I think the Merrick pick is going to be something that, you know, he did slide because of that injury concern. Mm-hmm. For those of you who didn't hear, don't know, during his pro day, he was wearing that trainer's tape on his back. Mm-hmm. What is it called? The
kinesio tape?
Yeah, kinesio tape. All over his back. I guess he had hurt his back. And those are the concerns that made him slide and made Holland and was that kid's name out of UCF, the other safety that were picked ahead of him in safety. But he was there. He was available. We went and got him. Should be a good pick for us. And I'm hopeful. The issue that I'm having, like you said, it's we got a lot of guys, and these guys, can they play in the NFL? I'm sure they can, but where are the stars here? Where are the needle movers? Where are the playmakers? And other teams seem to find them in lower rounds. And as good as Max Crosby has played, I mean, he hasn't played great. You know, he's not a Pro Bowler by any means.
Yeah,
I think he's just the best that we have, and because
he looks great better, compared to the rest of the defense,
he's better than the rest of the defense. So but compare him to the rest of the league, I don't think he's even sniffing the Pro Bowl right now. Can he get there? I mean, we'll see. But I mean, how long are we gonna have to, you know, keep holding the bag?
And this goes back with my theory that because the Raiders have been bad with their first round picks and they've been bad at free agency, you just have to get as many draft picks as possible and hope you get lucky, right? Just like, instead of like trying to like fish in one specific hole, just shoot out like 8 lines, 20 lines, mm-hmm. right? Just throw them all out there and hope you get something, which is why 2019 came out okay, right? Hunter Renfrow late, Foster Moreau late, Max Crosby late. Like, yeah, it was just, that's because we had 3 fourth round picks. You know what I mean? Like you're gonna land these guys if you just overload with picks. So that's my theory. Like, don't be the Rams where you're trading away first rounders for specific guys because you're not good at free agency. Don't be like giving away draft capital to trade up because you're not that good at drafting. Just get as many draft picks as possible and hope you stumble on some good guys, because that'd
be great if we didn't keep shitting our first round pick away.
You need three of them, because maybe you'll get one out of three if you get three of them.
And the thing is, I'm not saying you shit away the pick with the player Leatherwood. Like you're saying, we shit away the value of that pick. And that's what happens with bad teams, man. That's why bad teams, they keep making bad decisions both in free agency and in the draft. And that's why they stay bad teams, man. And the worst thing you can be in an NFL franchise is one of those mid-tier teams. If you're sticking in that mid-tier, that's the worst, because you're not guaranteed. Like, I mean, I say this even though they fucked up a number four overall pick, but normally if you get a top 10 pick, you're going to pick a needle mover. You're not going to reach unless you're the Raiders, for a guy who's just way off the charts. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you're really bad, you could start your building blocks with those draft picks. If you're good and you're picking towards the end of the round, you have maybe a couple of things you want to fortify here and there, but you're a high quality caliber playoff team. Just pick a couple guys here that are going to fit your system.
Look what the Dolphins did in a season and a half. Two seasons ago, they were a laughing stock, people thinking they were going to go 0-16. They went 10-6 last season and a shit ton of draft picks this last draft.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Mm-hmm. Because they treated draft picks like capital, like currency, like equity.
But the thing is,
GMing by them.
Who they had on their team? Okay, this guy Tunsil is an amazing player. Is he worth it to us? How is he made better for us? His value is made better to us by bringing in more players. Now, granted, you have to pick the right players, but that's what they did, and that's how they were able to make that jump so quickly. Is they traded away their players that had value, and they got back the commodity back for them. And when they got that back, they made the right decision. The issue that I'm having here is we're doing the exact opposite. Instead of identifying the players for their value, we're ignoring the value and just identifying a player, and we're selecting them. And
So it's tough, man. This draft class isn't doom and gloom, because look, like, this is something we're gonna
not until they haven't played yet.
Okay, like this is the issue, and it's the issue every single draft. Okay, so that does that because we get less value. That's bad, and it should change. And this is certainly a problem, but that doesn't spell doom and gloom forever. We still got a handful of players. I'm generally happy with all of them, not where they're drafted. But there's not a single one of these guys where I'm just like, there's no Tanner Muse of this group. You know what I mean? You're not pissing away picks. You're just undervaluing them, right? Or overvaluing the player, undervaluing the pick. So this isn't a complete doom and gloom, but this is an issue that's going to be dragging the Raiders down until they fix it. They can overcome it, right? Like, great offensive coordinator, running a great offense that John Gruden does. Hopefully, with Gus Bradley in there, the defense can turn around at least a little bit, with completely different scheme. It can be overcome. Tom Cable developing, reaches at line, which he's proven he can do. This problem can be overcome, but it is a problem. It's not the end of the world, but it has negatively affected the Raiders in the new John Gruden era. Unquestionably.
So here's the thing with John Gruden. John Gruden is a firecracker. He's a firework. If he's going to hit, it's going to be quick, and it's going to be gone quick, because it happened with the Raiders, the team that he helped build with Al Davis. They went to the Super Bowl. They were good. They were okay. They were good, and they lost in the championship game, right?
Mm-hmm.
The next year, they went to the Super Bowl. The next year, they were out of the playoffs, and they didn't sniff it for another, 15 years?
Yeah.
Same thing happened with the Bucks. He takes over a good team. The first year he's there, it's a great team already. He put them over the edge. They won the Super Bowl. Missed the playoffs, and I don't think they went to the playoffs since. And that's just – he's shown to be who he is.
Well, until he won the Super Bowl last –
I mean, with Gruden.
With him,
And that's just he's just shown to be that. He's gonna build up for that one pop, and then he's gonna fizzle out.
Yeah.
And you still had to get lucky. You still had to get lucky with, you know, a Rich Gannon if you're on the Raiders end, and you had to get lucky to be given a team that was in the, you know, NFC Championship game two out of the last 3 years before he got there. Mm-hmm. And I said it last week, and it's really frustrating as a Raider fan to grow up with someone running the team with an antiquated scouting style, who was more of like, who was a single patriarch of the organization, right? And that was Al Davis. He fastest guy on the team. I'm going to take that guy. I'm going to reach for picks. I'm going to get the peer players that I want, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And it just didn't work out. Towards the end of his career, it just didn't work out. Then you get to Gruden, who pretty much is the same thing. Antiquated, you know, draft strategy. Doesn't really see a board very well. Doesn't take the temperature of the league. Doesn't value the picks for, like you said, commodity as opposed to players. And he's the one in control. There's one singular guy in control with no checks and balances. And it's disheartening, man. It's really frustrating when you see all these other teams. Like, oh, yeah, there's always going to be at least three or four teams who didn't make the playoffs last year, who made it this year, or big teams that make a big jump. And it's like, it's not us, man. It's not us. And if we're stuck again, regardless of how the defense does, I don't see them being as bad as they have been. But regardless of how the defense does, if we're still another one of those 7-9, 8-8 teams, like, something's got to change, man. It's just been so long. It's like, look, I'm not saying that Derek Carr isn't the guy. What I'm saying is what you're doing as a collective is not working. So it's time to blow that shit up and start again. And it sucks, but guess what? At least we know why we suck, as opposed to shitting every year and like, oh, well, we're almost there. Well, we're almost there. Well, where is it?
But one guy who I put a lot of stake in, our next guest, Carl Crockerham from Raider Films, easily one of our most beloved guests and most asked about guests. So, of course, right after the draft, we got to have the guy with the that watches more film than probably any other Raiders fan, Carl Crockerham, next. All right, joining us now, probably our most popular guest we've ever had. He's the guy that's the creator of Raiders Films. He's one of the best guys to go to on YouTube to watch Raider players, potential Raider players, opponents.
Give him
one of the best
follow,
film
guys.
Studies out there. Give him a follow. His name's Carl Crockerham and joins Love us now. Welcome back, Carl.
Welcome back, buddy.
Thank you.
So the draft just got wrapped up last weekend. Just your overall feel of how the Raiders did this 2021 draft in Cleveland.
I absolutely loved it.
Really?
I absolutely loved it. I you know, what's the kid from, I think it was a fourth round, the kid from from Virginia Tech?
Divine Diablo. I love the name. Ooh. Divine Diablo.
He plays like it too. That boy is a hitter. I mean, honestly, a lot of people were saying that, you know, okay, they're going to move him to the will, but I think they should keep it with safety. And if Jonathan Abram can't hack it at strong safety, they need to move him right in there.
He's on notice, man. Abrams on notice. He's on notice right now.
Yes.
I said he might not even make the team. That's what I'm saying, because he was that bad in coverage. You know,
he's
been
that
bad.
They're not going to get rid of a first rounder after two seasons, but he was bad.
Yes, he was real bad.
If you have all, if these other safeties and other players that they picked up, and I've watched tape on these guys, what they can do is they can track the ball deep. Every single one of them, they can do that. Diablo has a little bit of an issue changing direction, but if you put him more in the box, may not be that big of an issue. But
he's gonna be in the box.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's gonna be that Cam Chancellor type. But if
same school and all,
same yeah. If you got these guys, if you got these safeties who are able to do the one thing that Abram is the worst, and I'm not talking out of turn here. He was the worst in the league in pass coverage. Okay.
Yeah, I know you're not.
if these guys can do it. Abram doesn't have a spot on the team. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I'm not trying to talk to take anyone's job away from him. Yeah. But
you,
like
you drafted three safeties. What does that tell you?
There's a big problem there. Exactly. And you signed one.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you signed one you released. You're like, hey, right. we'll catch and release and we'll jump back into the water with the fish in our teeth to replace the dude we drafted in the first round two seasons ago.
You know, I'm gonna tell you right now. When they signed Joseph, I was like, this Abrams in trouble. They basically let Joseph go for Abram, mm-hmm. you know? And so when they brought Joseph back, I'm like, oh man, they must be feeling like they made a mistake or something.
What did Marshawn Lynch say? Like, let's hope Abram took care of his chicken. You know, he didn't spend all the money. Let's hope he didn't spend all his money. Because, I mean, if you play that bad, it's going to be hard to find a job.
Yeah. And I, when you,
I think we're right here on that.
A first round pick going out like that, like, wow.
Yeah. That's
what I mean, you know, on it, but as horrible as it looked, it is fixable. I think he just tried too hard. And when I know because I've done it before, sometimes you could try too hard and you screw things up worse than you would have did had you not tried at all, basically.
Yeah. And you know what? After I saw your Abram video, mm-hmm. I went back and I took a look at some whole games of his. And he was, to your point, he was doing things out of character. What I really liked about Abram in college is he broke down early, which allowed him to be that missile when he hit, especially at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
Whereas now was he was being that missile out of control, not breaking down at all, and just any little juke move and he's in the dirt.
Yep.
Yeah. So, so he was doing things out of character. So let's just hope that for his sake and for our sake, we have a couple of guys in this league that or in our division like to throw the ball deep. So we need to make sure we get those safeties right.
Well, I'll put it like this: you say for his sake and for our sake, I'm going to say for his sake because the Raiders are going to be all right. They got other people to go to,
mm-hmm.
you know. Now they got other people to go to. So I hope for his sake and for. I guess for the Raiders draft history's sake, mm-hmm. you know, that he can get this turned around and work it out. Because if not, I believe the players are already there to where it's like if Abrams is stinking it up, all right, come on over here and sit down and you know, on to the next. Because I'm telling you, this Morick kid.
He's the truth, man.
I wanted him in the first round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was the little back issue he had in his pro day.
It is.
That's what made him slide. Grant and who's the other kid out of Oregon that went? It's funny.
Holland,
yeah. In the first time around, I remember Holland's name, but not Grant. And now I remember Grant, not Holland. But what I really wanted to get your breakdown on is the Leatherwood pick over a Darisaw who was still there, right? And then I wanted to get your Kuntz pick over like a Patrick Jones or even a Baron Browning, who were kind of the same player.
Because this is our thing. This is our thing, Carl. Like, I don't hate any of our picks.
No, right? I don't either.
I don't think any of the players picked up. Like, I don't feel like there's a Tanner Muse in here where you're like, we drafted him like last season. We're like, what are we going to do with this guy, right? It's just the value where they were at. Because, like, we had to trade up to get Marek. Leatherwood was picked so early. I feel like we got a lot of guys, but we gave up, like, a third rounder in between because we reach for so many spots.
All right, well, let me say this first. Number one, I like the Tanner Muse pick, by the way.
Okay, well,
but I understand it didn't turn out so well, but I'm going to go ahead and admit that I like the pick, you know. Okay. Mm-hmm. But either way, Leatherwood.
Leatherwood, okay. And Darisaw, that comparison.
Let me tell you something that you guys need to stop doing.
Okay.
You guys need to stop listening to the media to tell you what everybody's worth is. Because the value of a draft pick and all that stuff, that that's based, that's mythical. It's based on what they think. Mm-hmm. Oh, I think this. Okay, is there a chart? Is there a chart that has all the draft picks up there, and then what all 32 teams think of them?
No,
not precisely.
So how do we really know what their value is? Did you hear the report? You know, the guy who was in charge. He was the head of the Senior Bowl, of arranging the Senior Bowl. Mm-hmm. I forgot the guy's name. Well, he said Leatherwood would have went in the first round.
Okay.
He said the Leatherwood would have went in the first round, and Baltimore was one of the teams that was like hot on him. Mm-hmm. And okay. So they would not have been able to trade back very far and still get him.
Yeah, you still need a dance partner, right? You still need someone to trade back with.
That and the fact that, you know,
no one's saying here is saying he's a bad player. No one's saying that at all.
You can't. He just won the Outland.
Yeah.
That means he's the best offensive lineman in college football.
But this is the thing though, Carl, is like, yes, there's no like exact mock draft that everyone goes off of. Sure. But there's a general consensus more or less. Like normally, like the main mock drafts, the actual drafts follow along pretty closely. There's always outliers, right? There's always guys that fall, always guys that rise. You know, who are the Niners going to get at number three? You know, no one really knew, but it generally sticks kind of along those lines. And so
especially in the first round,
but when you're the Raiders who reach every single season, right? From Farrell to Abram to, you know, to now the Leatherwood, like they consistently do it, Carl.
Okay. What did you say? You just mentioned, he's going to go at number three. You did notice you said number three, right? Mm-hmm. Because the top 10 is the easiest to pick. After the top 10.
Yeah. It's a little bit harder.
There's a consensus top 10, of course, because those guys are cut above everybody else. Mm-hmm. And obviously teams have needs, and those players are that good that they're in the top 10. Mm-hmm. But after that, it's a crapshoot after that.
It's rough.
And they never have mock drafts. They never have the top 10 is usually pretty close. There are times that the top 10 is even way off because
when the Raiders are in the top 10, yeah, it is.
Somebody always throws a curveball or somebody.
Someone moves up. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so, but once you get past, you know, 10, 12, man, the further from 10 that you get, the more out there it gets.
I agree with that. I think the one thing with me specifically is I have this PTSD with the Raiders first round pick specifically, because I mean, you and I both agreed on the Derwin James pick. Now Derwin James has been injured early in his career, and you can't really translate that over from team to team. You can't say, oh, well, he was hurt with the Chargers, he would have been hurt if he came with us. You can't say that. You look at the player. Derwin James is a stud when he's on the field. And you and I both agreed on that one. Mm-hmm. And then you know,
you can't say if you're a Charger, you're probably getting hurt, because they always, I don't know if it's bad turf, but those Chargers just love getting injured.
So what I'm saying is the PTSD that I have from the Raiders is when you draft a Cleveland Farrell and the next two picks are Devin Bush and Josh Allen. That's hard for me to swallow. And that lowers the benefit of the doubt for me, for the executives with the Raiders making these picks. And when you do that, or when you have, let's say, a Ruggs, who, by all intents, can be a good NFL receiver, and he was hurt last year, but he was drastically outplayed by five or six rookie wide receivers. Arnett could have stayed on the field. Abrams was been a disaster. Go right ahead. Please.
Can I stop you on Ruggs? Okay. What was the Raider offense ranked before Ruggs got there?
What were they 2 years ago? Like 17, something like that?
15th average. Okay.
And what were they? What were they ranked when with Ruggs there?
9
to 9, 10.
Think about that. One player comes to your team and your offense is that much better. And please don't say it's because of Aguilar.
Well,
Aguilar was open for a reason. Why?
No, we talked about that. That is true. Everybody's
watching out for Ruggs.
No, I said that Aguilar owes Ruggs a Rolex.
Commands attention. He's the one player that everybody has to say, oh, man, this dude can hurt us in one play. This dude can kill us in one play. So we need to do something about him. We need to make sure that we have Ruggs taken care of. Okay, remember the Kansas City Chiefs game where I don't remember. I think it was the second game in 2019, and Carr threw two picks because they jumped the short
everything. Rounds. They jumped everything. They
jumped everything. They let Ty Williams run down the field. They didn't care about him.
They played old school Raider defense on the Raiders. The press defense with the high safety,
but everybody jumped short routes. They dared the Raiders to throw the ball deep. They dared them, and Carr wouldn't do it because he didn't have such a guy.
Yeah,
they get Ruggs, you know, running a 4.240. Now it's like, okay,
you gotta respect.
And what happened the first Kansas City Chiefs game in 2020? They dared him again. And so what he did it.
Yeah.
So he did
a long catch and a long touchdown. Yep. Yeah.
A couple of bombs to Ruggs and a bomb to Aguilar. Mm-hmm. And so Ruggs played hurt this, you know, his
rookie. He did.
So he was he was more of a decoy than anything, but guess what? He got it done as a decoy. I'm telling you, whatever Aguilar, he got that contract. He owes Ruggs some money.
Yeah, he does the break off Ruggs. I say he owes him a Rolex.
I keep saying Aguilar owes Derek Carr a fruit basket, like in the whole team, for turning him into a $28 million he got from the Pats?
26, I think. 26.
26?
26. 2 years, 26.
A lot of cheddar when we picked you up off of the free agency scrap heap.
Right.
There you go.
No one was trying to see Aguilar
for a million, for a million, you know, bucks.
The previous year.
Yeah. So what do you make of the Raiders going all defense?
He wasn't even starting in the beginning of the year.
I mean, they go lineman first pick, lineman last pick, all defense. This is the first Raiders draft ever without one skill player drafted. No quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end.
Do they need them?
No. I mean, they address need.
Okay, not only do you have Josh Jacobs, but you got
Kenyon Drake.
Yeah, you got Drake. Then you got Ruggs. You got Brent Renfro. You got
Edwards.
You got Snead. Really Snead.
Yeah, I mean, that was a weird one.
That they got depth. They got depth at receiver. Mm-hmm.
Poor Zay Jones. They're never gonna see a pass.
Oh, see, I forgot that. I just forgot that name. Zay Jones. That's a good
Brown.
He caught a couple touchdowns. John Brown. Yeah, I mean
Brown. That receiver group is
and the best super tight end room in football between Moreau and Waller.
I agree.
So, I love the fact that we're going to be able to push Waller out wide and use Moreau more as a traditional tight end, because Moreau's not slow either. He's a big kid. He can run, and his hands are like super glue. Stick him. He gets him right on there.
I love Moreau. And, you know, I've said that, you know, I've talked about I can't remember nobody's name today.
Waller?
Waller. I've talked about putting Waller out wide in the red zone in particular. And having him and Edwards out there on the edges in the red zone. God,
Edwards is so good.
And then you like you said, you still got the other kid tied in inside. So that red zone offense is going to be much better.
You got three big kids with good hands.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they didn't need offensive skill positions. You know what? And as far as defense goes, okay, they got all those safeties. I believe Gus Bradley likes the kid from Houston that we got in 2018 or 2019. The corner. The tall kid, he broke up the pass to win the Chargers.
Isaiah Johnson.
Isaiah Johnson.
Yeah.
I said John. Yeah, I'm on.
I'm so not remembering names today.
It's all, they happen to be all the time. I don't even worry about it.
Yeah. But yeah, they said Gus Bradley loves him, and I understand. He's what was he, 6'3" or something like that?
He's a big kid, long kid.
Yeah,
runs a 4.40, so he has speed too.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know his ability. You know, we saw his ability to break up that pass with the game on the line.
Well, that's a big, you know, that's a big, big moment.
So yes, so you know what? I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if he started outside with Mullen.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put a lot of people don't know, but Arnett, the kid Arnett from Ohio State, he was a good slot corner before he moved outside.
What I was saying is he was probably the fourth best corner on his college team. They put him in on the slot.
Depending on what year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
When he was young, yeah. He was, he's, you know, they come on, man. They produce all kinds of corners.
Dude, they were like pumping them out.
Yeah. So, and he was a slot corner. He started out a slot corner and then moved outside. So, if they can make that work, since Johnson fits the mold of the Gus Bradley tall, long corner, you know, they can possibly make that work with Arnett inside.
All right. Hopefully they man.
What do you think? What do you think our defensive line is going to look like? Because obviously now you're with Kuntz now in the mix, Yannick Ngakoue, Max Crosby, Clay Farrell, and then 97 defensive tackles that they had signed. I mean, because you know a Gus Bradley defense needs a strong defensive line. It is built on studs at that spot. And so I guess it kind of makes sense that they're just going to like, all right, let's just pick up a bunch of dudes, sign a ton of dudes, see who rises above the rest, because it's a bunch of one-year contracts with all the defensive tackles. I mean, do you think they have that recipe to give Gus Bradley the defensive line that his scheme needs?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, the one person – okay, I've obviously Ngakoue. He's the man. He came in. He's never had a season under 8 sacks. So,
yep.
Ngakoue is the obvious guy. But the guy that the under the radar guy, the guy that people don't realize is David Irving.
Okay.
Hmm.
That dude had
picked him up from Dallas, right?
In 2017, I want to say he had like 7 sacks in 8 games or 8 sacks in 7 games. It was somewhere in there. He had a lot of sacks. Mm-hmm. And of course he got suspended because he liked to smoke that bud.
The horror. Horror.
And now you can smoke, bud.
Yeah, he's good now.
You don't test for it anymore. So there's no – what's going to stop him now? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw him last, he was only in for like – I'm not sure. I don't even think he had 10 plays before he got hurt. But that's what happens when you haven't played in a couple of years and you haven't used those muscles, you know, in a while. Mm-hmm. So yep. Now – and he didn't –
no
he
practices.
It was a COVID year, no offseason program, none of that. Now he has a chance to prepare himself. I believe he turns into that guy.
Nice.
I believe he really turns into that guy. Crosby, he'll be okay. Furrow's Michael Bennett now.
Yeah, he's the inside guy.
You know, he's gonna be the base in the base defense. And then on third down, he's going to kick inside.
Kick inside, yeah.
And he'll be inside with Irvin to me. And Crosby will be the other outside rusher when along with Ngakoue. And the Coons kid will be in the rotation.
Carl, your optimism is infectious. Like we have like the
I'm worst great.
The worst pass rush in football, and you're like, no, dude, look at this. We got Irving and Kuntz and Ngakoue. It's like we're gonna be good. I was like, ooh, you give me all this hope, Carl.
People are that's because people are sleeping on a lot of the people that didn't. Okay, like for example, Irving, he didn't really get a chance to show anything. I mean, what 10 plays? I don't know, something like that. But he looked like the same guy though. If you look at him on film, he looks like the same guy, and he's still athletic, he's still quick off the ball. obviously he's still tall and long. He's still what, 6'7", still has those 35-inch long arms, and you know, and he doesn't stay blocked. And you don't have to stay blocked when you have 35-inch long arms. Yeah. You have arms that long. And so yes, I'm believing, and then what I'm most, you know, enthusiastic about is we got somebody that knows how to use all that, which is Gus Bradley. And, you know, Gunther, what did he ever do? What did he do to say that he deserved to be a defensive coordinator?
Any job that he had where he did well, he pretty much got a veteran heavy defense. He didn't have like a young defense like we had, and he had to develop.
Yeah, but guess what? He didn't do nothing with the defense in Cincinnati. They were ranked number 24 when he was, you know, when he moved to coordinator, and the coordinator went to become head coach in Minnesota. Yeah. And they were ranked number 24 and in the 20s. They didn't do anything. They didn't do anything impressive.
He wasn't great when it was the Chiefs either.
Even with the veterans, he didn't do anything impressive. So what? I gave him a chance, obviously. I said, okay, we'll see what happens with this double A gap system and how. Oh my goodness.
Did not.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing is this, one thing that we have to do when we get somebody new or whatever is this. You talk about the double A gap front, and I was enthused about that because, you know, you don't know which one's coming when you have these guys lined up in A gap and, you know, you got the safety walked up and, you know, you don't know who's coming. They don't really blitz that much, but when they do, you know, it's pretty much jailhouse. Yeah. But you have to pay attention to the coverage. You got to know what their coverage is.
And they didn't know.
This is, we, you know, Raider fans thought, yeah, this double A gap scheme and all this and all that. Oh, really, cover six?
They were lost, man. They were lost.
Cover six, all this cover four and cover six and you know, we're playing zone with bump and run corners, like playing off man with bump and run cover corners. Like, you have to, you know, either get players that fit your scheme or make your scheme fit the players, one of the two.
Yeah. That was a big thing Mayock talked about this offseason, was like just drafting players that didn't fit system or vice versa. Is this draft class, it's hard to tell because, you know, we think we know Gus Bradley's system, but will it change? You know, how much will it change in Las Vegas? Who knows? Did we get players that you think fits the scheme that we have, or was it the same problem over again?
No, we got players that fit the scheme.
Okay.
And the one corner that we did get, he's a bump and run guy. He's a press guy. And I'll put it like this. I mean, Gruden made a bad hire with Bradley the first time, but Gruden's not stupid. He knows football, and he brought Bradley in for a reason. And it was funny. Pro Football Focus had Trayvon Mullen as the best press corner in the NFL over the first five or six weeks of the season. Damon Arnett was the number one press corner coming out of college. And what a Gunther run.
Yeah.
You know, and what a Gunther. What did he run?
Yeah.
And so now, Arnett, press bail at Ohio State. Mullen, press bail at Clemson. Bradley, press bail. Mm-hmm. It's everything's fitting now. You know, we're not trying to put square pegs in round holes anymore. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you're talking about Bradley changing to this, that, and third. Is he really going to change knowing that he has press bail personnel now?
Hopefully not.
I don't think so. I think it, you know, I think they brought in Bradley knowing what they already had. And, mm-hmm. you know, like you said, Mayock talked about it. He's talking about it like that for a reason, because he knows that he finally has scheme fit, player fit. And look at the linebackers they got too. I mean, they're going to move the other kid to what's the Virginia Tech kid again? I still can't remember his
name. Divine Diablo.
Divine Diablo.
No wonder why I can't remember that name. Right.
You have to go like this every time you say his name.
Yeah, that.
Get across yourself.
Mm-hmm. But the Diablo kid, okay, 4.46. Okay, you know, I know you guys don't like him yet, but hopefully he'll dispel that. Muse, you know, 4.39. Speed at linebacker is what he's always liked. Bradley's always liked. So I believe they got the coordinator to match what they already have. And so that's why, if you really think about it, they got a bunch of free agents and they addressed the, you know, defensive line, but and they got defensive players in the draft, but it's still all fit along the mold of what Bradley does.
Yeah.
So I don't see Bradley all of a sudden changing now and saying, okay, we're going to run cover six now. We're going to run cover four now. He's going to be a cover one, cover three, press bail man. That's what he is. And so, and now he has what he needs to run that. Yeah. Including the first round. I mean, not first round pick, the second round pick in Morey.
Yeah. Switching over to the other side of the ball. The Raiders got a lot of heat for how they switched around their O-line. And I get why, like, losing Rodney Hudson, like, that sucks. That really, really sucks. But it's really not that crazy different. Colton Miller, Richie Incognito, Andre James, Denzel Good, and now Alex Leatherwood at right tackle. Do you think we'll see a drop-off better? Will they play different? Like, what do you make of our O-line this next season compared to how it was?
Okay. Think about this. What are the Raiders missing? Hudson. Mm-hmm. Now, they saw something in, I can't remember.
Andre James. Yeah.
Yeah, Andre James. There you go. they saw something in Andre James. Obviously, he was doing something in practice to make them okay with it,
yeah,
is what I see. And I don't think he played bad in the few plays and a few games or whatever that he had to replace Hudson. He didn't play too bad. And so you got that. And then, of course, Denzel Good, he was their guard already.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, the change, the change is Leatherwood for Trent Brown. Okay, well, everybody's like, oh man, Trent Brown. Okay, well, the Raiders played 11 games without Trent Brown last year, and Derek Carr's alive.
Yeah.
And Leatherwood's better than what we had replacing him last year. What was the kid? I can't remember he was number 70.
Parker?
Brandon Parker?
Or Sam Young?
Sam Young.
Yeah.
Parker played a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what? Parker actually did better than I thought. Not that he was great, but he did. I mean,
he was better than Sam Young.
He wasn't the turnstile he was in 2019.
Yeah.
Oh, especially 2018. Ooh,
that was rough. That was a rough year, man.
That was brutal.
He was a matador, dude. Just right. Olay. Go ahead and go by.
And I don't know how you guys see it, but I think that Leatherwood's the right guy for the job.
Yeah, I didn't hate Leatherwood the player. Again, like, and we'll just, you know, we'll have this conversation, I'm sure, multiple times in the future. It's just the value that bothered me. But I like Leatherwood.
No problem with the player, no.
I mean, obviously, you know, right? He played and he showed that positional flexibility that Tom Cable loves, right? He played right side, left side, guard, tackle. Like, he played everything but center. And obviously, and that obviously worked out great for us when guys started falling out, that you could put Denzel Good anywhere. You can move guys around.
Okay.
I think Tom Cable loves.
Is that not a part of value?
Yes. That is part of it. Yes.
So there's no guarantee. Okay. So there's no guarantee that. Can you guarantee me that Darrisaw could play the right side and make that switch and be okay?
I can't guarantee
it. I didn't have to do it.
I can guarantee you Leatherwood can, because he played right guard. If you can play right guard, you can play right tackle. I mean, as far as the footwork,
the footwork, yeah,
side of it goes. Now he played left tackle, so he was athletic enough, long enough, and good enough to play to protect your quarterback's backside.
Yeah, RJ.
Side. And so, and he played right guard, so he can convert footwork wise.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if Darrisaw could do that.
You don't, but let's stick to Leatherwood for a second, because he gave up 14 pressures last season. He only gave up 7 the season before that. He gave up 5 sacks last season. He gave up none before that. Are you worried at all that it looks like he dipped a little bit his senior year compared to his junior year?
Okay. What did he line up against a draft prospect every week?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now compare that to you know, because everybody liked that Tevin Jenkins guy.
Yeah.
That dude is, Oregon State.
Dude has no feet.
Oklahoma State.
I get the pancakes, and he was so mean, and oh, he would drive you 20 yards and out of bounds and put you on your team's bench. That's all great.
That sounds like a John Gruden guy. I'm amazed John Gruden didn't pick him or stuff like that.
But what do you do when you can't protect the edge?
You get a broken Derek Carr.
Because I've seen him get left in his doggone stance.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it. Now, he did change that, and he did get to the point where he got a good first step. But still, he doesn't have a kick slide that gets him deep enough.
Yeah, a kid from Texas got him a couple times.
When he's not deep enough, he has to turn his hips to face the guy. Mm-hmm. When he turns his hips to face the guy, that gives the defensive end a better angle at the quarterback. It's because he's trying to he's turning and facing him, and then he's trying to push him out past the quarterback. That's not how it's going to work. And what does that leave you? What does that leave you open to?
Inside spin move, double move.
Thank you.
If a guy opens the gate too early, you just gotta beat the hands, and you're already there.
Right.
Because once you beat the hands, you're the shoulder's basically where the quarterback is, and you're on top of the quarterback.
Okay, I'm glad you said that. Beat the hands. His hands aren't gonna be that hard to beat. Why? 33.5-inch long arms.
Mm.
My man Leatherwood has 34.5.
Yeah.
You know,
long too.
What's the Mendoza line for Cable? 34.
34 inches, yeah.
And so you want to put this short arm guy at right tackle, the short arm guy that's not really that quick, that doesn't have the quickest kick slide. Man, you know what? Look at Leatherwood and look at Jenkins on film. Oh, matter of fact, that brings me to the other video that's actually coming out
nice
this evening. And man,
what do you think about Darrisaw? Because Darrisaw was available too, the kid from Virginia Tech,
Christian Darrisaw. From
Bautech, yeah.
Okay, I can't guarantee that. Again, if you want to talk about value. And can he play right tackle?
That's the one thing. Yeah, he played left his entire career. Tackle. Yeah,
I know my man can.
That's true.
You know, I know Leatherwood can convert to the right side with no problem, seamlessly. Mm-hmm. Now, some people have problems when it's on.
It's not easy. It's not always. You can't always do it.
It's on a different side and the different footwork. Everything is reversed, and so. That causes you to think, and what happens when you think
slow?
You get Jonathan Abram. when you, you know, when you're mm-hmm. and when you're and when you're trying too hard, and when you're trying and you're overstressed in your brain. And now, you know, when you're overstressed in your brain, that brain farts and you do things that
you normally don't do.
You don't normally that you don't normally do, and they look horrible, and it makes you and it makes people wonder, how did he make it to the NFL? All because you're thinking too much. All because your brain is too stressed.
I've never had that problem, Carl. I never think too much. Never think. Yeah, I just make it a habit not to think too much, Carl. It's treated me great all these years. Yeah,
good. Don't. Because I have, you know, I have done it at points, and yeah, it makes things 10 times worse than if you're just doing
react.
And yeah, exactly. Just react. Just go out there and do it. Trust, what is it? Trust your coaching. Trust your, you know, technique. Trust. You gotta trust those things. You can't just say, okay, oh, I gotta do this now. Oh, I gotta do that now. As soon as that thought creeps into your brain, you're done. Yeah. So you just have to trust what you know. And I think it's gonna be more comfortable for Leatherwood. And what I wanted to tell you guys about the tape, man, Leatherwood floats. His kick slide. You watch his kick slide. He floats. He gets he gets back there. He floats. I mean, obviously, best player available is a projection, you know. But on top of that, how did he win out? If Leatherwood was so bad, how did he win the Outland Trophy?
It's true.
And he didn't just win the Outland Trophy, but he won it playing in the SEC, where he's playing against a dog every week.
Yeah.
And not only did he play against dogs in the SEC, but he played in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so what's crazy? Okay, you said he gave up 11 pressures.
14.
He gave up 14.
14 pressures.
Yeah.
Okay. And because I saw something where he only gave up a handful of pressures, and he only gave up 2 sacks.
It was according to ESPN stats info, he gave up. Yeah, he went from 7 to 14 and from sacks 0 to 5, and he gave up 17 penalties in 2 seasons.
Oh, see, okay.
Do you see him? Is he a penalty issue? Do you think, even with all his good things, right? Do you think he's a penalty liability? No.
No, Tevin Jenkins is a penalty issue. They didn't call those penalties, but he held. Oh my goodness, he held the outside of the shoulder pads. On a regular basis, which is why he was able to make all those pancakes, because he's holding them in to begin with. But
steering wheel.
Yeah, exactly. But back to Leatherwood. See, according to PFF, he gave up 2 sacks, had 2 penalties, and 3 pressures, something like that, or 5 pressures.
Okay.
According to Pro Football Focus. So, you know, who are we to listen to? And then at the same time, though, because I can't really tell you that Pro Football Focus is the rule of law either, because they had Jenkins not giving up a sack in 2 years. I saw him give up 2 sacks in 1 game against Joseph Asai from Texas, same guy that he pancaked, same guy who got 2 sacks on him. And he left him in his doggone stance late in the game.
That's what I was talking about earlier. That kid from Texas abused him a couple times.
Yes, he left him in his stance. And so, but yet he didn't give up a sack in 2 years. What are you talking about? And Jenkins didn't play against the best competition. You know, a lot of Jenkins competition, they're going to be bouncers at strip clubs over the next couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, let's look, man, Ohio State. I'm not even going to say names because I'm not going to remember them anyway. But they got 2 draft prospects. Some of them, a couple of them are from this year, and a couple of them will be coming out early next year. You know, they'll be early draft picks next year.
Yeah.
You know, and then who else did they play in the playoffs again?
Ohio State and
Notre Dame.
Damn,
there you go.
Name was first one.
They got a couple of dudes that just got drafted.
Good. Yeah, 2 guys now.
And then, you know, I don't need to say anything about the SEC because they always got somebody coming out.
Yeah, their lines are always big.
Yeah, either everybody that plays in the SEC is either a draft prospect this year or next
year. Or next year.
Yeah. Or the year after, you know? So this is what Leatherwood has had to play against. And if you look at his fluidity, athleticism, his ability to just get back there, get back deep, get his pass sets deep. Now, don't get me wrong. Sometimes he oversets and he can get beat inside too. Mm-hmm. But that could be cleaned up. Mm-hmm. Because he's able to change directions. He has long arms at that. So I truly believe, not that I believe the Raiders needed to take a tackle in the first round, because I want him Oregon round one.
Yeah.
But I'm happy because they got him in round two. Doesn't mm-hmm. matter when they get him, they got him. Mm-hmm. But I truly believe that Leatherwood was the right guy to take at that time. I mean, you know, what, Penei Sewell?
Mm-hmm.
That dude is
he's the truth.
Yeah. He's special, dude. He's
So is Slater.
Slater.
And
Herbert was running for his life last year, and now he has Slater. Oh man, I was like, God damn it.
You know what though? You got to remember. Okay, he has Slater now, but we got Ngakoue now.
Yeah,
you know
that's
what I
true.
Mean?
Everyone's getting better.
Ngakoue's beating better guys than Slater.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure.
Yeah,
you know, and like I said, he's never been under 8 sacks. And then on top of that, okay, let's just say that Slater and Ngakoue cancel each other out. Who are they gonna block Crosby with?
That's true.
Okay, who's their guard to block Furl? Who's their guard to block
Irvin?
David Irvin.
Yeah,
man. I know people are, you know, I get it. Raider fans are afraid to be optimistic about it.
We're damaged goods.
I get it. You know?
Yeah.
And, okay, don't get it twisted. I have not been optimistic every year.
Mm-hmm.
But these last two, actually, these last three, because in 2018, I was optimistic because, we had Derek Carr. We still had Amari Cooper. We still had Khalil Mack at the time. And, you know, Gruden was coming in to be the coach. So I was like, oh, man, this is it. Then Mack's gone and Cooper's gone. And I knew there was nothing coming. The Raiders had nothing coming to us. You know, we had nothing coming to them after that. So I was like, okay, whatever. And then, you know, they came back and they made all those acquisitions. You know, they got, you know, Ty Williams and Trent Brown and Antonio Brown. And the next thing you know, Antonio Brown's gone. I'm like, okay, you know what? We still got a team because, you know, Ty Williams and, you know, a bunch of other guys, you know, and then Waller and, you know. And I was optimistic that year. And then what happened? They started 6-4. But you know, you can't plan for somebody to go 2-6 down the stretch or whatever the case, man.
Yeah.
You can't plan for that. You think, okay, they're obviously good enough to, you know, start that way. So that team was, you know, it was good enough to have a stretch, but obviously not good enough to be consistent. I get it, but you know, again, I believe the defense is the main problem. Then this year comes. All right. Now, you know, we start off 6-3.
Yep.
But then what happens? You know, think about it, though. The second Charger game, the Dolphins game, and help me out here, there was another second Chiefs game.
Okay.
Yeah.
They were allowed, the defense allowed them to march down the field and score in like 20 seconds to win the game.
Yeah.
I'm exaggerating, obviously, but.
Well, you're not that far off.
But my point.
Yeah, it's not that. If we win, Chiefs was 40 seconds.
If they win those three games, they're 11-5. So this team is right there.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this team is right there. And now we have a coordinator in, you know, Bradley.
Bradley, yeah.
And made some additions. Safety, that was a big, you know, a free safety. Mm-hmm. That was big. Because we allow bombs over Baghdad, you know, every game.
Every game, yeah.
Yeah. You know, guys looking lost.
Now we have some. Now we did something about that. So there's reason to be optimistic this year.
Well, you're always a shining light.
Is it guaranteed? No, because something can always happen. But you know what? On top of that, the Raiders are a lot deeper this year. Remember, yeah. Last year, if somebody got hurt, that was it. We got guys that can fill the gap if necessary, you know.
And we play the NFC East next season, which is ooh, I like to pick on those boys. Wow. Yeah, I'll take some easy pickings. I like that a lot.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, like Michael Scott from The Office said, I am ready to be hurt again. And you're always giving us a reason to be optimistic, Carl. His name's Carl Cochran. Follow him on Twitter at CTwice32. And of course, the fantastic YouTube channel Raider Films. Carl, always a pleasure, buddy.
Thanks, Carl.
Thank you.
Carl, dropping knowledge as always. Always optimistic.
That's lifting what me up. Lifting me up.
Every time it's like, oh, I love this guy. I love that guy. I love this player. This coach is getting everything together. This third year player is going to find another, you know, better way. Like, yeah, man. Like he's the hype man that like gets me ready for game one every season. Love it.
I am still not as sold as he is on our draft class as far as value goes, but I am feeling a lot better about the players we got.
He hasn't swayed me to not believe about value picks anymore, but he does do a good job of like, hey, if we got the right players and they work, that's what matters the most. It's like, well, if we got the right players, if they pan out, then yes. That's a capital I, capital
L. He got you to think positively about Tanner Muse,
right? I didn't think that was possible.
That's special.
He pulled it off. You ready to do some what up windbags?
Always.
All right. Dick Vitale. Spelled the same way. Vitality. Hey, guys. Great stuff. Juan, would you rather have Bridgewater or Carr? All the teams got way better, according to all the analysts. Every team in the NFL is going to win 5 or 6 more games. Nope, really. And always the more important thing is depth of roster and injuries. That is basically the same thing every year. To be determined is what I say, and that is why we play the games. Hopefully we can be really fortunate this year as far as injuries are concerned. So, yeah, mm-hmm. You know, all that's true.
Okay, so would I rather have
Teddy Bridgewater?
Bridgewater with the rest of – do I think Bridgewater is better than Carr would be on that team? No. But the rest of the team with Bridgewater as opposed to what they had is a problem.
Offense and defense or just his offense?
No, the whole team. Whole team.
So Broncos are going to be a problem with Bridge.
Yeah, if you put Carr on the Broncos right now, that's a very, very, very good team.
That's challenging, I think, the Chiefs for the AFC.
That's challenging the Chiefs. If with Bridgewater there, it's such a massive step up from what they had. Yeah, it's a team around him that makes him better because he's not this turnover guy, gunslinger guy. When he has the weapons, he can put up points and he can win games.
Amen, James. Vic Fangio defense can't stop John Gruden's offense. That's a good versus a Fangio D versus a Gruden O. That's a nice little one-on-one. I mean,
albeit a Fangio D without a specific player who will remain nameless on the Broncos defense who didn't play last year.
Yeah, screw it.
But with Von Miller back on that team, it's going to make a little bit of a difference.
Yeah. Last one, Dutch Master 710.
Ooh, RJ, Dutch Master.
RJ needs to take a good look around the teams in the NFL. There are a lot of super teams. The game has changed drastically from even 2016. You need a top flight offense if you want to win Super Bowls. How many top defenses got into 30 plus point shootouts this season? RJ's okay with being mediocre and not taking chances. I bet you anyone would agree that Justin Herbert is a better quarterback than Carr after just his rookie season, not stat-wise. This has always been my issue. If we get rid of Carr and move Carr, do we trust John Gruden to replace him with someone better? No. No. He has no history of being a good talent evaluator for quarterbacks. He got Rich Gannon 22 years ago and then has been shit since. AJ McCarron, Nathan Peterman, Tui Asisopo he drafted, Marcus Mariota he gave $10 million to be a backup. Like, that is Derek Carr the best quarterback in the NFL? No. Do I thank God we have him, though, because John Gruden is such a bad talent evaluator that if we got rid of him, what would it be? AJ McCarron, like Nathan Peterman's going to start for him? Like, that is the problem. Not that Carr's the best in the world. I don't trust John Gruden to replace him.
Yeah. When I speak about Carr and moving on, it's always with a specific player. It's never like letting Gruden make that decision. It's just with a specific guy. I'm just not sold on his talent evaluation. We talked about it earlier about his the way to a certain degree, both him and Mayock just don't have a temperature of a draft board of other teams and how the flow is going with these drafts. It's the talent evaluation. We've heard it from four different guests. Gruden is a great coach, a terrible talent evaluator. It's the way it is.
And that's going to be our future moving forward. So
seven more years.
We got the draft is done. Offense looks solid. The defensive pieces are there.
TBD.
I mean, between now and September, we'll see what unfolds. But this is a lot of reason to be optimistic in the future. Thank you, Carl Cochran, for making us very optimistic. I didn't think he'd be able to pull this show out of its funk after how we started, but thank God it did.
Oh, man.
Leaving with smiles on our faces.
Always.
Until then, knock on wood if you're with me.
Thank you so much, Carl Cochran, for joining us and really shedding some light onto what would have been an otherwise very dreary episode. Again, make sure to like, comment, subscribe, because that helps us help you bring all the wonderful stuff. Until next time, later.